Good morning. It is Sunday, July 21st, 2013. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. The artists of Northwest Arkansas present their 19th annual regional art exhibition and reception on Saturday, August 10th from 1 until 3 at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale. Over 70 works from a 10-state area will be on display from August 1st till the 30th. More information available at artistsnwarkansas.org.
Ahead on Weekend Ozarks, we learn more about 3.14, the number known as pi. We meet Penelope, the pet skunk. Plus, Becca Martin Brown tells us what's up and the Sunday morning montage.
But first, from support of a carbon tax for manufacturers to rabid mammals in the wilderness, Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis takes to the outdoors with a look back in the past week in stories regarding the environment in which we live.
One of the environmental stories from this week came from the Fayetteville City Council. While most of the items on the council's agenda were standard fare, the final item on the agenda spurred spirited debate. Alderwoman Sarah Marsh presented a resolution that states the city's support of a national revenue-neutral carbon tax, where manufacturers who use fossil fuels would be required to pay a carbon tax on their fuel usage. The resolution was written in such a way so as to encourage members of the U.S. Congress to implement such legislation, as well as other programs to help slow climate change. Alderwoman Marsh says that the resolution is a way of recognizing that Fayetteville does not exist in a bubble.
Our citizens are not immune from the projected increase in temperatures, extreme weather events, disruptions to agriculture or our food supply, or harmful health effects. And it's municipalities like the city of Fayetteville that are going to be on the front lines of combating the effects of global climate change. Let's take, for instance, the projected increase in severe weather events. When we have more ice storms like we did in 2009, who's going to clean up that mess? It's our city workers.
But not everyone on the council was as optimistic about the value of such a resolution. Alderman Justin Tennant said that he felt the resolution was a statement that the city shouldn't be making.
I believe a majority of my constituents do not want me to spend my time on this council having my own version of a congressional hearing. I don't think that this is a disrespectful thing to Alderwoman Marsh whatsoever, but to pull in the ice storm several years ago and blend it together with global climate change, while possibly might be a reason for the ice storm, I think it's a big stretch to justify that as a Fayetteville reason for us to make this sort of statement.
In the end, the council approved the resolution by a vote of 5-1, with Alderman Tennant abstaining and Alderman Martin Schottmeyer voting against the measure. New signs being placed around Beaver Lake are aimed at heightening residents' awareness of the environment and that the lake is the drinking water source for much of Northwest Arkansas. The signs are being put in place through a partnership between the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission, the Army Corps of Engineers, and the Beaver Watershed Alliance. John Pennington is the executive director of the alliance.
The recent survey that we conducted indicated that there's still 10 to 15% of the people out there that are not aware that Beaver Lake is their drinking water source. And anecdotal information through just tabling at outreach events indicates that many people do not know where the water that comes from their faucet actually comes from at the source, which is Beaver Lake.
Most of the signs are simple in nature, stressing that Beaver Lake is the drinking water source for Northwest Arkansas, featuring the logo of the Beaver Watershed Alliance, and asking lake users to help keep the lake clean. Pennington says that the water quality of Beaver Lake is good right now, but the signs and other awareness programs are aimed at concerns about water quality in the future.
Our area is expected to grow tremendously throughout the next half century and more. And that's where the greatest concern comes in, is that if we don't start working now to address some of the issues that are taking place, the cost of our water treatment will go up and the quality of life in our region could potentially go down, along with community economic growth and development. And in particular, the two pollutants of largest concern for the future are sediment and nutrients.
Pennington says that phosphorus contamination is the biggest nutrient concern for maintaining water quality in the future. As mentioned a few minutes ago, the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission was a partner on placing the water quality signs around Beaver Lake. Coincidentally, Governor Mike Beebe on Wednesday named a new appointee to the Game and Fish Commission. The panel oversees hunting and fishing regulations. Ken Reeves of Harrison replaces outgoing Commissioner Ronald Pierce, and Reeves says he is looking forward to serving the state.
It is an honor, but more importantly to me, it's an opportunity to do something I've wanted to do for a very long time, and that's to give something back for all the good times, good friends, and good memories that have come my way through my outdoor experiences in Arkansas.
In recent years, the Game and Fish Commission has been embroiled in several controversies and low employee morale. Reeves says that he will work to restore public trust and believes the best days of the commission are ahead. And if you're out enjoying the wilderness, you might want to watch out for aggressive mammals. The 100th case of rabies for 2013 was confirmed this week in Boone County by the Arkansas Department of Health. Ed Barham, who works in the department's Office of Health Communications, says that while infected cats, dogs, and bats have been found so far this year, skunks are the animal most commonly found to be infected in Arkansas.
They appear in the daytime, which is very unusual for a skunk, which is a nocturnal animal, and they look like they're drunk or something. They're weaving and wobbling and falling down. They're disoriented. They're usually very aggressive, and they'll chase after dogs or cars or anything else. They're behaving really unusually. When you see that kind of behavior, then you can suspect that what you've got is a rabid animal.
Barham says that if you suspect an animal is rabid, you should contact animal control or an environmental health officer so that the animal can be put down properly and the head sent to the public health lab in Little Rock to be tested for the rabies virus. In addition, Barham says that pet owners should make certain that their animals are up to date on the rabies vaccination.
The state law requires that you have dogs and cats vaccinated every 3 years by a licensed veterinarian. That's a change in the law. It's about 2 years old now, but it used to be that you could do it every year and that you didn't have to have a licensed vet to do it. But that's changed, and that is the law now. So people need to know how serious and dangerous rabies is.
Rabies is fatal if left untreated. Barham says that in the case of the rabid cat in Boone County, the pet didn't exhibit signs of infection until hours before it died, which is unusual as most animals tend to show aggressive behavior days before the virus runs its course. Barham also says that the most common way that rabies is transmitted to humans is through bites or scratches by bats. From the Harold and Blanche Kalk News Studio, I'm Timothy Dennis, and this is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
Tomorrow is July 22nd. Not necessarily a notable date, but if you take the month's number, 7, and the day, 22, write it as the Europeans do, 22/7, or 22/7, you will get an approximation of pi, 3.14. And so tomorrow is casual pi day. I asked Edmund Harris, math professor at the University of Arkansas, to come in to talk about pi. He began by talking about approximations.
So if we start off with how we do numbers, we start off with whole numbers. We have a system we can write whole numbers, as many as we want. And then from there, we can get into fractions, which give us a nice system. And with fractions, we can get between any two fractions, you can always put in another one. So we get a system which can sort of go as small as we like. Unfortunately, that system doesn't give us everything. And pi is one of these irrational numbers that just can't be written as a fraction. But we can define it because we can look at a circle and we can say, well, how does the radius or the diameter of a circle relate to the circumference? In other words, if we go across the circle, how does that relate to going round the circle?
Who discovered that this number was, I mean, how did they come up with it? How did mathematicians come up with this?
Well, it really goes back as far as we have decent records. But the point is that a circle is a very natural shape. So before mathematicians, it was needed by builders.
Wheel.
Yeah. or drawing a circle. And I mean, actually, there's even a quote in the Bible which sort of defines the value of pi, and that is, and he made a molten sea 10 cubits from one brim to the other. It was round all about, and his height was 5 cubits, and a line of 30 cubits did compass it about, and that's from the first book of Kings, which, and that obviously gives a value of pi of 3, because the, in some sense, the diameter is 10 and the circumference is 30.
So close.
Certainly, it's the closest whole number.
Yeah.
And actually, Rabbi Nehemiah in AD 150, who was one of the earliest Jewish mathematicians that we have records of, he said that the error came because you measured the brim from the inside of the edge to the across, whereas you measured around from the outside of the brim. So there was a sort of thickness to the vessel that was being described, and that's where the slight discrepancy came in. And actually, he gave 22 over 7 as an approximation of pi.
Okay, well, there you go.
But I think the idea of where it comes from is, well, the circle is obviously this form, but the amazing thing about pi is not that it's the ratio of the circumference to the diameter of a circle. For any shape has a similar number.
Any shape has a similar number to pi?
Yeah.
Okay.
So for example, for a hexagon, it's 3. If you look at the diameter of a regular hexagon, that is, and then you look at the circumference, that will be 3 times the diameter.
Is it different for a triangle, though?
No. Well, it depends on what you mean by a triangle. If it's the same shape of triangle, you'll have the same basic property. But what's the amazing thing about pi is that it doesn't just describe the ratio of the circumference to the radius of the circle. It also describes the area of a circle.
And that's where pi r square comes in.
It's the fact that it's the same number for both pi r squared and in 2 pi r.
So the radius squared times pi?
Yeah.
Right.
And that's what makes it an amazing number. The fact that you can now do both the area and the distance properties of circles. And I think, so it was important because of this relationship with circles.
So it's just, it's all over geometry. It's all over.
And again, we're going back to the approximations. Archimedes used, we've already mentioned, regular polygons. And that was one way that people started to work out better and better approximations for pi, and started to get a sense that maybe you can't get it ever exact in terms of fractions. And he worked out that it was between 223 over 71 and 22 over 7.
Is this close as you're ever going to get to the actual number?
Just said it was somewhere in that gap.
Okay.
We now have far more precise, when we have pi to billions of digits.
Right.
About the same time, the Chinese mathematician Lu Hui was using similar methods based on polygons to look. You can put a polygon inside the circle and a polygon outside, and you know that the polygon inside the circle must have a shorter circumference, and the one outside must have a longer circumference.
Well, yeah.
And so you can now use that to get estimates, numbers that are going to be definitely bigger, numbers that are going to be definitely smaller. And you can, so from there, you can squeeze tighter and tighter and on pi. The one interesting thing is that if you take, so we're thinking about pi as a decimal, with a 3.14.
Right.
And all the methods we have for generating the digits of pi in decimal, you have to find them in order. So if you need to find the thousandth digit of pi, you need to find the first 999 before you do that. So it's sort of, you get better and better approximations. You can't get more accuracy until you've done all the work up to that point.
Why would you need to know the 1,000th digit of pi? Why?
Well, it's an interesting mathematical challenge is the main reason. Finding better, quicker algorithms. I think by the time you get to the thousandth digit of pi, the level of accuracy you're using is far smaller than even if you consider the whole universe at the scale of the Planck constant, which is the shortest distance we can observe. You're probably well beyond that. Not at the thousandth digit, but at some point you can get to that. And at the billions of digits we have, our accuracy beyond anything we can ever measure or need to use. Where it becomes worthwhile is it's a great way of testing computers. Testing your ability to program. It's a sort of good challenge.
So if a computer can get to the 1,000th digit, is that what you mean?
Well, it's a way of writing an algorithm. Can you get to the 1,000th digit quicker? And if you can get to the 1,000th digit quicker, this is why there's now a competition. People show off how fast their computers are by finding more and more digits of pi. And it's finding cleverer ways to find the digits, and you're showing the power of the computer by being able to go 1,000 digits. It can be done on anyone's phone these days. But when you get to billions and billions and billions of digits, it's a great challenge. And I mean, in some ways, you could equate it to what's the value of throwing a javelin a long distance?
Right.
Well, it shows you're capable of it. It's
right.
That human challenge. The actual effect, historically you throw a javelin so you'd hit something and get some food or kill your enemy, but now it's just a feat of strength.
Right, like in the Olympics. I mean, they're just doing it to prove that they can, and to prove how far.
So I think these days pi is, and it's a sport, if you will. And I mean, it's often used by companies to say, look how this bit, or universities say, look how big our computer is. We can go this far with digits of pi.
So with that being said, is it still useful as far as, making circles and things like that?
Well, 22 over 7. Let's come back to that. One of the reasons that is such a classic result is that is a really useful approximation. If you want to look at fractions that approximate pi, the next best one is 333 over 106. And that's getting into numbers which are rather hard to take advantage of.
That's what I was going to say. It's much further away from 22 and 7.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas 22 over 7, you can quite easily measure out in various ways. And so there's some people have used... 25 over 8. And that's probably because if you look at most rulers, they don't give you a seventh. They do give you eighths and sixteenths.
Of an inch. And
you can measure, if you want to make a rope that's roughly a circle, you can measure out what radius you want, and then multiply by 44 over 7, and that gives you the amount of rope you need. And just by making that rope meet up and making it as circular as you can, you get not a bad approximation for a circle. Or if you need to estimate materials you'll need, 22 over 7 is a pretty good approximation. For most purposes, we don't need billions of digits. That will do.
Edmund Harris is a math professor at the University of Arkansas.
Sugar pie, honey bunch. You know that I love you.
Next, Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich brings us a story about a young couple who appear to have a remarkable affinity with skunks.
Hey, my name is Marilyn. I live here in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, and I have a dog. His name is Buster. I have a cat. His name is Panther Midnight. And I have three snails, and then I have a baby skunk, and her name is Penelope. And then I have a boyfriend, and his name is Vinny.
Marilyn Sloss moved to Eureka Springs 3 years ago to work in the local therapeutic massage industry. She now owns the clinic where she hired on, Healing Benefits Massage, on Kings Highway, just down the street from where they live. Marilyn also met and fell in love with Vinny Shipley. He moved to Eureka 5 years ago, restores historic tourist accommodations. We'll hear from him in a bit. He's tall, muscular, covered in tattoos. She's small, with flowing brown hair and a cherubic face. They couldn't be any more different, but they have one thing in common. a deep appreciation for skunks. Marilyn brings out Penelope, a wild baby skunk, which they rescued a year ago. She was napping. She sets her down on the dining room table.
My friend had found Penelope back when she was probably about a week and a half old, down in Morrilton, Arkansas. And anyway, something had attacked her, and all of her paws were damaged, and the tip of her tail was damaged. So we found a very close vet who deals with skunks and who descents them. So we ended up taking her to him, and he, gave antibiotics and different things, and he actually ended up taking about a quarter of an inch to a half inch of tail off of her.
As she tells this story, Marilyn caresses Penelope's shiny black pelt. She's unable to groom herself properly. She's a paraplegic skunk. Her front paws are impaired. So Marilyn bathes her every few days. She has tiny black eyes and a little black snout. She's really cute, and she loves to snuff around. Penelope's a yearling, weighs 3 pounds. She skitters about using her rear legs to propel forward.
She loves to play. So we have little cat toys, and I love playing with her. But what her favorite toy is actually a rolled-up paper ball. She loves that.
Penelope chirps when she gets really excited. Otherwise, she's just really quiet. She's very friendly and seems to like being petted, and she nuzzles if you pick her up and put her on your shoulder. This is the couple's second skunk. Flower was their first, which they rescued from a family who could no longer care for her. Clearly, Flower was a great teacher.
Skunks are just truly amazing creatures. They're very, very loving. They're very sentimental.
They hold grudges.
Yes, and they do hold grudges, believe it or not. And with Flower, she was so funny. All you had to do was point at her, just point at her, and she would stomp.
Like when they took Flower to Petco for a harness, Vinny held her while Marilyn fitted her.
She was so mad at her daddy, she would not have anything to do with him for 2 solid months because he was holding her.
Apparently skunks never forget. Plus, she was a night owl. This is Vinny.
She would just drive me crazy, wanting up on the bed, wanting down, and they're just busybodies at night. But not
Penelope. Penelope likes to sleep with us.
The skunk's habitat is the bedroom in order to avoid the dog and the cat.
I told you Flower was a daddy's girl. Well, one day after work, I come in and both of them, both Flower and him, are laying on the bed and they're both stretched out like this. Uh-huh. Flower's on her back, he's on her back, and they have their arms like this. I have a picture of it, but yeah, it's just, it's crazy. I'm like, oh my God, two peas in a pod.
Skunks are nocturnal in the wild and sleep in nests and burrows often constructed by other critters. They prefer to rent, and most predators avoid them for obvious reasons. Skunks provide fair warning before they spray, jumping, stamping their front feet, arching their back, charging and growling. Some skunks will even do handstands as a warning, but when they spray, skunks are accurate, hitting targets as far away as 20 feet. Females give birth to as many as 10 pups a year. They follow mom around for several months before leaving the den. They can weigh up to 14 pounds and live in the wild up to 3 years. They forage on fruits, herbaceous plants, insects, worms, grubs, even small animals and small fish. Skunks are native too and range only in the Americas. Two species roam in Arkansas, the famous striped skunk, which are common, and the eastern spotted skunk, which is less common and protected. Flower was striped. Penelope, she's almost entirely black. Sadly, Flower's previous humans did not feed her correctly, and despite Marilyn and Vinny's best effort, she died from a kidney infection. But soon after that, they were delighted to take in Penelope. But she's disabled and frail. A local veterinarian looks after her, which is fortunate because many vets refuse to treat skunks. That's the sound of Penelope having a snack. Marilyn opened a container of waxworm in his hand, feeding her. She's fussy, subsisting mostly on these grubs and occasionally strawberry banana yogurt, which is allowed.
It has to be Highland, and it has to be strawberry banana.
Flower was housebroken, used a litter box, but Penelope, being disabled, uses puppy pads. And the couple take their skunk out in public and on errands.
It's called Community First. That's where we bank at. And when we had flour, first thing, what does he do? He, you know, he's got her up here, and he's like, brings up her tail, and he's like, this is a stick up. And everybody at the bank, they're like all crowding. They're like, oh my God, that's a skunk. Oh my God. So from the get-go, flour was, you know, a star. And the same with Penelope, you know. They're like, well, we can't wait on you until you bring Penelope in.
But on certain days, Penelope goes to work with Marilyn.
I have a couple of personal clients of mine that absolutely I have to take Penelope in there with when I do a massage. She has to be in there.
Arkansas laws are quirky on skunks. According to the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission, it's illegal to import or export skunks into Arkansas and to breed or keep them. You can trap and move them without a permit. You can rescue them from the wild if you're a licensed rehabilitator, and then they return those animals to their natural habitat. But state law does allow up to 6 hand-captured fur-bearing animals, including coyotes, foxes, rabbits, raccoons, squirrels, and skunks. But foxes, raccoons, groundhogs, bats, and skunks carry the rabies virus. Penelope, of course, is up to date on her rabies vaccinations and has tags to prove it. When they have time, Marilyn and Vinny volunteer at the local humane shelter. They hope to purchase a plot of land someday and build a home. And the couple are toying with the concept of being wildlife rehabilitators. They're naturals. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
The University of Arkansas Division of Agriculture Extension Service has an excellent website on skunks if you seek technical information. And if you have a wildlife emergency, contact the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission, who can link you up to a local wildlife rehabilitation center.
Later today on This American Life, a dozen little boys crowd into a pitch-black bathroom. Little boys chant to make a bloody face appear in a mirror. Also, camp dances, fake Indian powwows, singing in the mess hall, color wars.
Bloody Mary, stop! Crap, it does.
If you didn't go to summer camp this summer, come with us later today on This American Life from Public Radio International.
This American Life with Ira Glass just ahead, beginning at 10 this morning on KUAF 91.3 FM.
As you pull up to the Tyson headquarters on Don Tyson Parkway in Springdale, you'll notice a large bronze sculpture on the front lawn. Birdman is a Native American man on a horse. He's holding an eagle. The sculpture, by Jack Woods, an Arkansas-born artist and friend of Don Tyson, was commissioned by Don Tyson after the untimely death of his half-brother Randall in 1986. Just across the lawn from Birdman is another sculpture, Yokes on the Trail of Tears by Pat Muzak. Works of art are not unique to the exterior of large office buildings or corporate headquarters. Yet these two works are just a hint as to what's inside this building. Dubbed Springdale's Hidden Treasure, these walls hold the 600-piece Tyson corporate art collection. The collection began with Don Tyson, son of the company's founder, John Tyson, and leader of the Chicken Giant for years. That's according to Archie Schaefer, former executive vice president and today's tour guide.
Don collected for years traditional Western art, and you'll see lots of bronzes, many of them done by Jack Woods, who did the big piece out front. But then a few Remingtons and Russells and others that Don collected, as well as, you know, traditional cowboy art paintings, you know, of cowboys and Western art scenes. And Don started collecting.
136 pieces were collected during the Don Tyson era of collecting up to 1992. His son John got the art collecting bug after becoming familiar with the Louvre in Paris during college in the 1970s. Though he is still very much collecting, his era is said to be from 1992 to 2002, in which 177 pieces were acquired. And since 2002, 202 pieces have been acquired. But that doesn't include the IBP collection. Tyson acquired the Beef and Pork Company in the early 2000s, and along with the company came their art collection of nearly 200 pieces, two of which stand guard in front of the entryway. On either side of a pair of large wooden doors, works of art themselves, rest two Indian sculptures, Iron That Walks and Trophies of Honor. They rest under two skylights. It's like they belonged in the Tyson lobby. And once you're in the lobby, you'll see two George Dombeck paintings. They hang above a couch, which is across from the secretary's desk. Dombeck is an Arkansas artist. He lives in Goshen and is a close friend of the Tysons. From his flowers to a water tower series, The company has at least 60 of his watercolors. And if you take a right at the desk...
There's one. This one is entitled Hello, and it's a big red flower hanging right at the beginning of the hallway going to our executive wing. But Don Beck, you know, goes through these phases where he paints one kind of thing or group of things for a long time, and he went through this period where he painted flowers and water towers and, you know, architectural things. You know, he was trained as an architect. So.
This painting takes us to the Pop Art Hall, which includes apples and the Oval Office by Roy Lichtenstein, prints of food by Wayne Thiebaud, works by Richard Diebenkorn, Sam Francis, Robert Motherwell, Helen Frankenthaler, the Robert Indiana Love series, which many will recognize from stamps with the slanted O, or the sculpture at Crystal Bridges. And then there's a piece by Brendan O'Connell.
About 10 or 12 years ago, decided to not paint anything but scenes inside Walmarts. And so he has become very well known as the Walmart artist. And we commissioned him to do a piece of Tyson products that was based on a photograph taken in a local Walmart store of some of our products in a display case.
The work is of Tyson Anytizers inside a freezer case. Though abstract, the products are easily identified. Brendan O'Connell has been dubbed the Walmart Warhol. And speaking of Andy Warhol, the pop artist has an entire hallway in these headquarters all to himself.
This hallway is dedicated to Andy Warhol. This is the Andy Warhol Cowboys and Indians collection that is 14 serigraphs that show everything from John Wayne to Sitting Bull and Geronimo. And this was, as I said, the first collection that John acquired and installed back in the early 90s. And we moved the artwork around quite a bit, but we have had these here in this one hallway for a long time because it's kind of a landmark for people in the company to tell people, go to the Warhol hallway. And
take a right, you'll see art. Take a left, more art. Hallways run north-south, east-to-west, and almost all are decorated with art. Real art. Much is by Arkansas artists, or those that have a connection to Arkansas. All is done in the 20th century or later, and some are gifts, like Cowmouflage, a sculpture of a cow and a chicken that rests in an atrium connecting two buildings. Cowmouflage was part of the 2001 Kansas City Cow Parade. And since Tyson has expanded to include beef and pork, it seems fitting. A work depicting the pork aspect of the business was also a gift, though this one was anonymous. The piece just appeared on a loading dock, and Schaefer welcomes any help in finding out who gifted it.
It is entitled Slaughterhouse in Terre Haute and was done by an interesting artist named Noel Rockmore, who was not from Arkansas. He was a New York and New Orleans artist that worked in the 50s, 60s, 70s, up to the 90s. I think he died in 1995. but there's kind of a resurgence of interest in Rockmore now. He was a true bohemian, I would say, and the theme of it is you know, it's inside a slaughterhouse with pigs being processed, which is why we assume someone connected to Tyson thought we needed it, but we still haven't quite figured it out.
The large painting is colorful, though it depicts the gory scene inside a slaughterhouse. Nearby is the entrance to the Don Tyson hallway. Works from his personal collection. Some pieces even hung in his home.
A hallway that is dedicated to Don's traditional Western art and includes paintings and bronzes. All of the bronzes down this hallway were done by Jack Woods. But for people who like cowboy art, there's some pieces that people will... you know, artists that people recognize, James Bama, that's a Remington. Frank McCarthy was one of Don's favorite artists, so there's three or four McCarthy paintings, including this one entitled Old Blue Heading Home, which was Don's favorite painting and hung behind his desk in his office for a long time. And it's by Charlie Dye.
Archie Schaefer is a longtime executive and friend of the Tysons. He's also part of the four-member team, loosely called the Art Team. His interest in art came after taking an art history class from Don Harrington in the 1990s. That local artist is best known as a writer, but Tyson does have a few prints he did in the 1950s. Schaefer's favorite is one depicting a scene inside George's, the longtime Fayetteville watering hole. Schaefer's office is in the executive wing. You'll notice when you cross that threshold, because the carpet is plush, the walls are lined with Arkansas oak, and behind the secretary's desk, bronzed egg crates. When we reach Schaefer's office, I ask what hangs on his walls.
Three or four Noel Rockmore pieces in it. Also have a Doug Randall painting. Doug Randall's a Fayetteville artist that a lot of people collect Doug's stuff. I have a Russell Cothran photograph. Russell, you know, is a photographer for the U of A that lots of people know. I have one of Russell's photographs. Have a Lenora Parlor. I have a piece done by a great aunt of mine from Pennsylvania back in the 30s or 40s, I think. Behind my desk, I have a couple of woodcuts done by Neil Harrington, who is a Russellville, Arkansas artist.
Though not on his walls, Schaefer's favorite pieces in the collection are those by Carol Clore, whose sketches and paintings depict life as he remembers it. Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art has some of his work. Also of note here, Crystal Bridges Museum has borrowed pieces from the Tyson collection. It's difficult to do this collection justice, which includes 25 photographs by Ansel Adams, works by Thomas Hart Benton, and sculptures by Ginger Henry Geyer. We've only seen what the flat building holds. There are two more towers that also contain art on the Springdale campus. Schaefer says they're trying to figure out a way to show it to the public, perhaps tours one day a month. As it is a place of business, people can't just wander around freely. It's for the Tyson team members to enjoy as they walk to their desks with their morning coffee or rush from one meeting to the next.
John just strongly believes that that exposing fine art to our team members and visitors, customers, vendors that come is important to cause them to think about things outside what goes on in this building, but also to encourage creativity and, you know, thinking about the big picture of where we are in the world, and everyone seems to enjoy it. Our team members, I think, are very proud of the collection.
Archie Schaefer is a former executive vice president with Tyson. He was also my tour guide for the Tyson Art Collection. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
We have invited Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers, back to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. Welcome.
Like you could keep me out.
That's right.
I'd knock the door down. This is the most fun I have all week. I get to tell you about something really cool about someone really cool that you'll recognize the name.
Who is it?
Do you remember Nancy Hendricks?
No.
No?
Mm-hmm.
You do.
Mm-hmm.
12, 13 years ago, there was a play in Fayetteville called Second to None.
Okay.
About the history of Fayetteville.
Yeah.
And Nancy was the author. Well, since she left Fayetteville.
Can I just?
Sure.
I'm sorry, but that was such a great production because there were some people who you'd seen on stage before, but there were also some people you hadn't.
Mm-hmm.
If you recall, Joe Fennell of Jose's fame was in that.
I know who that is.
Yeah, that was a great show.
Joe Fennell, Margaret Rutherford,
Charlie Allison,
Kevin LeBourne,
yeah.
Dee Dee Lamb.
Yeah, it was a real fun.
Becca Martin.
It was a real fun
I
event.
I recognize a yes. lot of those
yes,
names.
Yes, it was a lot of fun. And then Nancy vanished. I didn't know what happened to her. Well, she moved to Jonesboro. She's been working at ASU. And she's been writing about Hattie Caraway. She has become kind of obsessed with Hattie Caraway, who was the first woman elected a U.S. senator.
From the great state of Arkansas.
Not the first woman from Arkansas. The first woman.
From anywhere to be elected to the U.S. Senate was Hattie Caraway.
Exactly. This was
I
in
know
the
somebody
30s.
Else that wrote a book about Hattie Caraway.
David Malone.
So you know about, yes. Do you know more about Hattie Caraway than you ever wanted
Probably,
to know?
Probably, yes.
had Huey Long come up mm-hmm. and campaign with her.
And it's kind of a fascinating story. And Nancy's been writing, she wrote Ms. Caraway and the Kingfish, a play that premiered in Northwest Arkansas. She wrote Dear Mrs. Caraway, Dear Mr. Keyes, which was the centerpiece of the centennial celebration at Arkansas State University. Then she wrote a book by the same title. Then she did a film, a half-hour film, called Hattie Caraway, the Silent Woman. Mm-hmm. And now she's written another book, Senator Hattie Caraway, an Arkansas Legacy. I tell you all this to tell you that she's going to be at the Fort Smith Museum of History.
Yes.
August 1st and August 3rd. And she's going to sign books and do some living history as Hattie. This is all part of an exhibit at the museum titled The Divergent Path Women in Arkansas History. It will be on show through the 31st of October, and it includes other people like Betsy Kelly, Hattie Trent Smith, O.C. Payne, Carolyn Pollan. Fun idea, fun chance to see Nancy again. So all of you who were in Second to None, we need to make a road trip. Showtimes are 6 o'clock on the 1st and 1 o'clock on the 3rd, and you can find out more at fortsmithmuseum.com. Also this afternoon, Fort Smith Little Theater is in the middle of a run of Emma.
Jane Austen.
Well, an adaptation.
Well, yes.
Of Jane Austen's novel. Showtime today is 2:30 at 401 North 6th Street in Fort Smith, and tickets are $10 at fslt.org. And today is the final show of Thoroughly Modern Millie at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale. That showtime is 3 o'clock, and tickets are $10 to $20. Also this afternoon, at 2 o'clock at the Rogers Public Library, part of their groundbreaking film series, The Wizard of Oz.
Oh.
My mother tortured me with this, yes.
Okay.
My mother tortured me with this as a child. So if you have a child you'd like to torture, 2 o'clock at the Rogers Public Library.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
More pie now.
I like pie.
Two helpings of pie this morning on Ozarks at Large. Earlier we heard about kind of a pie, the number pie.
The number pie.
That inspired this week's Sunday montage, which takes in all kinds of pie.
A long, long time ago. I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance.
Where is he? Who threw that pie? Shut up, you're out.
But audience, we want to see her hit with four pies, don't we? I think that's the yes. So you help me out on the count of three. We're going to let it go. Ready? One, two, three. Here goes pie number one, pie number two.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
And one time at band camp, we weren't supposed to have pillow fights, but we had a pillow fight, and it was so much fun. And this one time, we all lost our music, and we were supposed to play this song, but we didn't know it. So we just made it up, and we kept playing and playing, and the conductor didn't know what we were doing, and it was so funny.
She's my cherry pie. Cool drink of water, such a sweet surprise. Tastes so good, make a grown man cry. Sweet cherry pie, yeah.
Wow! You think we had the pie? From the way that people keep avoiding? No, you don't. Heaven knows a try, so. But there's no one comes and even to inhale. Right you are, so would you like a drop of ale? Mind you, I can hardly blame them. These are probably the worst pies in London. I know what it takes to take them. I should know, I make them. But good night, the worst pies in London. Even as polite, the worst pies in London. If you dare to take a bite.
Let's see then, where to begin?
I was born and raised in one of the most beautiful places on earth. It was a time filled with wonder that I'll always remember. But when my family chose to move our zoo halfway around the world, that is when my greatest journey began.
Get your pies for the great pie fight.
This is our studio commissary, where some Hollywood stars come to eat. Keep in line.
Yo, I'm a lyrical heretic, but I'll make you laugh. I'll hit you with rhetoric, then I'll cut you in half. I don't need to be a clown, I don't need to be nice. How about you sit down and I serve you a slice of my 3.14 apple pie. My voice is so smoky, it'll make you high.
If you'd like to see the clips included in our montage, you can go to OzarksAtLarge.com.
The band Don't Stop Please moved to Fayetteville from Conway earlier this year in search of a more vibrant music scene. We heard from them on Friday's edition of Ozarks at Large prior to their music release party at George's Majestic Lounge that evening. While they were here in the Carver Center for Public Radio, they played three songs. This one is Henry and the Great Salt Lake.
So this one's called Henry and the Great Salt Lake, and it's a love story and also a little bit of a social commentary. One, two, one, two, three, four.
Song to sing.
told Jones to fill the silence. A moment where they both could live. Neither stepped out far enough since it long.
The band Don't Stop Please inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. You can catch them live at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art Thursday night for Art Night Out.
Support for KUAF comes from the University of Arkansas Bookstore, reminding everyone that August 3rd and 4th is Arkansas's tax-free weekend. The University of Arkansas Bookstore offers a selection of school supplies, textbooks, apparel, and more. Razorback apparel is also available at the Northwest Arkansas Mall and Pinnacle Hills Promenade in Rogers. uofastore.com for more information.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Omega.
All right. And Weekend Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. More Christina Thomas tomorrow at noon. You're hosting by yourself tomorrow.
I am. I'll be here. Until then, have a good Sunday.